Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Bob Hunt and Jose Barreto continue their Hyper-V over SMB series, and in today's episode, they discuss a recently released independent study that compares the performance between Hyper-V local and Hyper-V over SMB. Tune in as they chat about the results, as they take a deep dive to see how Windows Server 2012 performs in terms of storage, networking performance, efficiency, and scalability. Bob, the mic is yours.
So welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Bob Hunt. I'm an IT pro evangelist for Microsoft based in New York. With me today, I've got my friend Jose Barreto. I'll let Jose introduce himself.
Hi there. So my name is Jose Barreto. I am a program manager in the Windows Server team, more specifically in the file server group. And in general, I've been working with Windows Server 2012 recently and the Hyper-V over SMB scenario.
Excellent. So today's episode is going to compare Hyper-V local versus Hyper-V over SMB performance. And essentially what we have here today is a report that was commissioned that we want to essentially call out some really interesting performance metrics that have come out from this report. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and really talk about, really this significant change in terms of the way that things like storage spaces and other technologies can be deployed over the SMB protocol rather than having to deploy it locally. So let's get started with that. So Jose, talk about what this report is. Essentially, this report was commissioned by Microsoft, and essentially, who did it, and I guess why.
Yeah, so this report is essentially something that we wanted to have a third party to validate some of the claims we have in Windows Server 2012. It actually covers a lot of ground and covers the new storage spaces feature. It covers the new Hyper-V over SMB scenario. It covers other things like deduplication, offloaded data transfers. We're focusing here the comparison between local and remote file storage. But the real issue here is we have some claims about the product, and we wanted a third-party validation of what we have as a claim. So try it out, see how it works. Tell us if you can confirm our claims. And that's what they went out to do, and the report came out recently. We're very excited about the findings.
Yeah, that's great. So let's jump into it a little bit, right? So kind of the first thing, just by way of kind of introduction, I think where we're going to spend our time today is focusing in on running storage spaces over essentially on Hyper-V with both local and over the SMB protocol. So just for the folks that might not have rolled out storage spaces yet, can you give us a quick overview of what storage spaces is with Windows Server 2012?
Oh, absolutely. So storage spaces is a new capability in Windows Server and the client as well that allows you to get a set of disks and provide resiliency. You can actually create a pool out of physical disks and carve out spaces out of them, which are essentially virtual disks that you can create out of a set of physical disks. And we provide things like mirroring, and other capabilities like thin provisioning, and all these capabilities used to be something that you'd have to have a more sophisticated device, a storage array to provide these capabilities. Now we essentially can expose these disks, raw disks, straight to a Windows machine, and Windows in software can do all these things. And we want to prove here that it can do it very effectively, that you get the resiliency, you get the performance to go along with it. And in this specific example here, we have 60 disks in a JBOD, in an enclosure, that essentially are exposed straight up to Windows. There's no RAID controller, there's no storage array, just disks exposed to Windows. And we want to look into how does this perform here in the report, how it behaves, and how easy it is to configure it.
Fantastic, and that's a great segue to essentially where I know when I talk to customers, certainly my larger customers in New York, one of the first things they're going to say is, "What? You're doing this on just this sitting out across the enterprise, not necessarily rated or with behind some big fat caching controller that their hardware manufacturer says is going to increase performance. You're just going to take disks that are wherever in your enterprise." And create these virtual disks. And the concern would be, oh my gosh, well, that's not going to perform unless it's on, you know, my favorite manufacturer's storage frame. So that's what this this report is really starting to show us. So let's talk a little bit about that. There's a couple charts in here. I think we're looking here at pages 6 or 7 in the report. For those of you who are following along at home, one of the things that I think it's important to call out that we're first going to talk about is just running storage spaces essentially locally. So talk a little bit about this first chart here on page 6.
Sure. So we're combining here a scenario where you have an OLTP database, so an online transaction processing database that is essentially taking a lot of transactions being processed. I think the simulation here is to have customers that are doing transactions on a trading system, right? So this is a typical scenario that we use with SQL Server. But as you probably know, what we're doing these days, we're not running SQL bare metal anymore, especially if it's on a huge database. So in this case, what we have VMs. So we're combining here Windows Server 2012 running Hyper-V. So inside the VM, we have SQL Server 2012 running online transactions. And they started by doing one VM. That one VM was performing at a certain rate. So we have 3,000 customers being simulated in this one VM, 500 transactions per second, give or take. And then we added more and more VMs, up to 8 VMs on this single server. Each one of the VMs is performing this. So a few things that you can take out of this. First of all, we have very good response times. So we're performing all these operations, and the response time is 0.01 seconds. So and even if we have 8 VMs, it's 0.03 seconds. So that's really just a few milliseconds to get this information processed. So you really have very good performance that we're seeing the same levels of performance you'd see on a more sophisticated storage system. The other thing you can see here is the scale. So as you go from 1 to 2 to 4 to up to 8 VMs, you see that the performance grows linearly. So we can handle the added load, no problem at all. So we're driving what these 60 drives can deliver, and we're doing it in a very consistent, scalable fashion. So that's a really good example of what you can do with storage spaces. And keep in mind, right, these are just drives being exposed to Windows. The configuration of storage spaces is really something that you can do it through PowerShell, but there's a GUI for it as well. So it's very straightforward to do. So we're proving that this is both easy to do, easy to manage, but also performs well and gives you the scalability and reliability that you need.
No, that's great. No, and this is a pretty telling chart here, because essentially what we have here is we've got a Hyper-V host that's running this virtual machine locally. You've got fantastic performance on this, as the chart shows, right up to 24,000 customers here, essentially going up to almost 4,000 transactions per second. So it's literally getting to the point where these VMs, where you start out with one VM with 500 transactions per second, now you've got essentially 8 times that, and we're almost there, right? There's only a slight difference in performance as we've scaled out this storage space to have 8 large VMs running OLTP workloads, which is very cool. Let's kind of take the next step and say, okay, great. What I said earlier in the session was, well, one of the flexibility, the things that come with Windows Server 2012 is your ability to now take and host this workload over the SMB protocol, putting this workload someplace else rather than locally on that Hyper-V host. So this report talks about that a little bit. So let's touch on that a little more.
Yeah, so the typical scenario, right, you don't want to use local storage for your Hyper-V hosts if you have a large number of machines all doing local storage. So you have to have some sort of shared storage. So you can do that with storage spaces. You can have a set of machines that are all connected to the SAS. But if you want to scale bigger, say you have 16, 32 machines, you want to have some sort of shared storage. And up to if the only options would be storage arrays like SANs, fiber channel ISPs. We're introducing in Windows Server 2012 this new option of using a file server. And again, the same thing you said before about, you know, attaching a whole bunch of disks directly to Windows without controllers. People also are initially, you know, hesitant with storing things over file protocols. And what we wanted to show here is, okay, we're going to introduce a file server in this workload. So remember, we had the VMs straight up talking through SAS to your disks there, or essentially local disk or directly attached storage. And in this second round of tests, we have a file server in the middle. So you have Ethernet, 10 gigabit Ethernet between the Hyper-V and the file server. And the file server is a SAS attached to the same set of 60 disks. So very similar configuration, but you're introducing the file server in the middle. And the goal here is to, first of all, enable the flexibility, so we're not talking about managing block storage. We have shares, and you could easily connect a whole set of machines. So using Ethernet connectivity, most people you know, are very familiar with how to have not only one or two, but a few dozen machines together and have this kind of connectivity, and prove that it's easy to do, that you can do it in an efficient way as well. And with all the capabilities we talk about, we can also make it resilient to network failures and to file server failures if you use the technologies that we talked before in our series. So this is the evidence. Does it really work like that? And they tried it out for us.
That's great. So so this chart, kind of going back to what we talked about with the first one, right? We've got essentially the same kind of workload, right? So now that we're putting the same workload across the SMB protocol, we've got essentially the same thing. We've got we start out with one virtual machine. We've got 499 transactions per second, and then we go up to 8. So let's talk about how this scales pretty linearly as well.
Yeah, so if you remember the numbers from the previous one, like the one VM was doing 500 transactions per second, you can see that here over SMB, we are doing essentially the same number of transactions per second. And all the way up to 8 VMs, I think the number we have was 3,900 something. We're doing 3,885 transactions per second. So it's really, really close to what you had before. And I think the evidence that we have here is you can have the flexibility of SMB. You can have the added benefits that we have that we talked about in the previous sessions, but you do not have to give up on performance to do that. We are essentially operating here at the speed that the physical drives can deliver. So the bottleneck here is definitely the storage, it's the disks. So you have 60 spinning disks. They each can give you a little over 100 IOs per second, so that's what they're doing. And the fact that they're remote doesn't really make much of a difference from a performance standpoint. And even the response time, I'll call out that the response times that you're seeing here, it's the same scale that you had before. So 0.01, 0.02, 0.05 at the most. In terms of response time here, that's amazing. And you know how we're doing this, right? This is through RDMA, because RDMA makes that remote operation look like it's local. And so we're delivering really local storage performance and response time, but we're remote. So if you were in the machine, it would be hard for you to tell from these numbers if the results are from a remote storage or local storage. So, and that was the goal.
Right, so that's something we definitely want to touch on when we hit on the lab configuration a little bit, but that's something I just want to, highlight again, right? Essentially, we've got, the same workload put over a protocol. We're talking the transaction time change is, moved essentially for 24,000 users. You've got almost 4,000 transactions per second, and the response time is 0.05 of a second, as opposed to 0.03 of a second from the local workload, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a hard time, detecting the difference of 0.02 of a second
Most humans won't be able to tell the difference, right?
Certainly not. All right, so The other nice thing that I like about this report is it actually does put these two things side by side, right, just to kind of call out and further emphasize what we're talking about here, right? And this time we actually bring in, IOPS performance into the discussion. So I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, when we talk transactions per second, the definition of a transaction is depending on the workload. So although you could compare local and remote, and that makes a lot of sense if you have the same type of transaction, most people will ask us, okay, but what is really the IOPS on this? Because the IOPS is kind of a universal measurement that's not dependent of the workload. So we put those numbers in there, and we put them side by side, right? So that was awesome that they provided that to us. We initially looked at this and said, okay, oh, look, the difference is almost inexistent, right? So if you look at the remote over local for the higher one, for the storage spaces with 8 virtual machines versus the SMB remote with 8 virtual machines, you see that one is doing 7,000 IOPS, the other was doing 6,850 IOPS. So that is really very close. It's within 2-3% local to remote. So that's really what we were going for. That is just, and if you measure that multiple times, you have small variances there. And that's really what we were hoping to see, that we can prove that local and remote maybe are so close that it's indistinguishable.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. This shows a 97.9% performance for 24,000 users, essentially across, local versus remote. That's really, 2% difference in performance, whether I put it locally or remote. So it really allows me to do. I know certainly what my enterprises would do is they want to keep their Hyper-V hosts and keep their storage, where the storage makes sense. So having a file server be the point to place these workloads, I think, makes an awful lot of sense, because it really does centralize where the storage goes right onto these file servers, which I think is really just an eye-opening performance. So really what this takes me to is that, it's like, wow, this is really kind of a big deal. So, the next logical step is that, hey, how do I do this? We commissioned this third-party company to do that. Let's talk a little bit about the lab environment that they use to set this up, because I'm sure this is something our customers are going to want to try and, mess around with and set up and say, wow, this is really something that makes sense for my business, because, hey, I've got disks in, an iSCSI, frame. I've got disks that's in our SAN frame. I've got some... some standalone, direct attached disks. I'd love to be able to leverage all of those for, some of these workloads. So let's talk about, the hardware they use to make this happen.
Yeah, and the fun thing about this, right, the main difference between these older solution and this new one is that we're using server class hardware, but we're using industry standard hardware, or there's really not a special class of devices here. If you look at what they use this specific setup is a Dell PowerEdge R910 for the server. So that's in both in the storage spaces and the SMB testing. That's the server that's running the actual VMs. And you can see there they have a few CPUs, and they show the model, the Xeon X7555, and the memory, you have 524 gigs of RAM, because you have lots of VMs, right? So you have to have memory to go and support that. And in terms of the storage itself, it's a JBOD. So JBOD essentially is an enclosure that you can put disks in. We're using the RAID Inc. 4U enclosure that fits 60 drives. The drives that we're using are 600 gig SAS drives. So we have those 60 drives in this enclosure, and we connect it to the system through 6 gig SAS adapters. So we have all that information there. And then on the storage spaces, you have one machine and one JBOD attached to it. In the SMB testing, they have it at the end of the report. They have like the list of the equipment that they use. The server running the VMs is literally the same for the SMB testing, and they introduced a file server. So the file server configuration is slightly, the configuration is not as high-end as the other one, because we're just running the file server workload. So it's a Dell PowerEdge 810 with an Intel CPU, the X6550. It has half the amount of RAM. We're not too pressured on RAM typically, or CPU. Unless you have much, much more workload than this. But at 7,000 IOPS of 60 drives, we can handle that just fine. And we're using, obviously, the same connectivity between the two with a 10 gigabit Ethernet. Again, for this kind of workload, 10 gigabit is fine. We're not pressured on network, and we have other types. So the report actually mentions another configuration where we use 56 gig interfaces to achieve a few hundred thousand IOPS. But with this configuration, we're spinning disks, and that's only, you know, typically done with SSD drives. But with this configuration of spinning disks, 10 gigabit is plenty of connectivity, and we're storage bound in this configuration.
Yes, I mean, you know, the thing that jumps out at me here is that, you know, there's nothing, you know, really exciting from a hardware perspective here. This is very pedestrian hardware, right? This is the regular kind of server. If you were going to buy a server, you would just go buy a server that would meet this configuration. Okay, yeah, so, you know, one of these, you know, the physical servers for the, you know, Hyper-V hosts is 32 processors. Okay, you know, in today's day and age, that's not that big for certainly not for my enterprise customers. But the file servers... Yeah, the file server is half the size, you know, that we're talking about, and that's where we're storing all this stuff, right? And that's really the piece that's interesting, right? We're getting, you know, that is really the place where we're storing all this workload. The fact that that's, you know, got half the memory of the Hyper-V host and half the processor of the Hyper-V host, and we've got this kind of performance, you know.
We have proved that for a file server workload, you can have a file server handling a very, very high number of IOPS. And typically, it's only, as I said, when you hit something like half a million IOPS or higher that you're going to start thinking about CPUs. If you're just doing like 10, 100, even 200,000 IOPS, you should be fine from a CPU perspective with a single file server. Now, if you go bigger than that, then you start thinking about, you know, scaling out, having multiple file servers, spreading the workload around and all that. But with this later generation of Intel 4i7 CPUs that they are available now, that's what people typically call the Gen 8 server, right? I mean, a single file server can deliver a whole lot of throughput. The bottleneck typically is, as in this configuration, the actual spinning disks. And if you have enough of those, or if you're using SSDs, then the bottleneck might shift to networking. And for that, we have higher speed network interfaces and the potential of using multiple network interfaces. You should use at least two anyway, not for performance, but for fault tolerance. But you can do more. You can do 3-4 interfaces if you want. So really interesting that this is just regular server hardware. So you could use the same hardware that you're using to run your virtual machines to run your storage workload. And Storage Spaces works well with that. Clustering works well with that. And if you have extra memory, as we have here, we can use that for caching. So as we mentioned in the previous episode, CSV, the cluster shared volumes and clustering now has this ability to do caching. So if you have more memory in your file server, we can put it to good use, but not really a big requirement unless you want to do that. So yeah, regular industry standard hardware using for handling all the storage tasks and resiliency and all that. So good stuff.
That's great. So just to touch on the networking, right? I mean, I all the servers I've seen come out of the box for the last few years, you know, come with, you know, 10 gigabit Ethernet built into it. Are you using the 10 gig, Ethernet that comes with it, or are you using a separate adapter for this?
Oh, typically, if you want to go for a limited workload, you can even use 1 gig Ethernet. There are still plenty of servers that ship with dual 1 gig, quad 1 gig And if you're not pressed on network bandwidth, you can definitely use that. But in this specific case, we went with, I believe this one is on a Chelsea T4 adapter, which is a 10 gig adapter that can provide RDMA. We've ran the workload also on regular 10 gig at times and higher end InfiniBand 56 gig. These are all valid. This one is using RDMA. But the regular 10 gig, especially for a workload at this level with 6G spindles, will work fine with non-RDMA. The main difference there is not performance. The main difference there is how much CPU is left on the Hyper-V host to actually run the VMs. So if you're running a whole lot of VMs or VMs like this that run SQL workloads that put pressure on the CPU itself on the Hyper-V side, you want to leave plenty of CPU for those VMs. So that's why you switch to RDMA.
That's good. No, that's good information. But that's the other thing, too, as we talk about scaling up these workloads, it's important to know the different pinch points that come up from a performance standpoint. As you know, our customers are testing this out and rolling it out, it's important to say, hey, if I add more processor here, I'm going to get more performance. If I add more network there, I'm going to get more performance. It's all based upon how you grow this particular workload in your environment.
And speaking of pinch points, on this one, we're using 6 gigabit SAS, 4-lane connectors, and storage bandwidth between the JBOD and the server is not a concern here because of the type of disk we're using, the performance that it can provide. In other configurations, if you have more JBODs or if you have disks that can perform better than this, like SSDs, you might start to be concerned also with that SAS connectivity. So you can have multiple SAS adapters in the machine. There's strategies for that as well.
Excellent. No, that's a good point as well. All right. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to wrap up today's session. I think this was certainly an eye-opening, set of performance information from this report. Once again, my name is Bob Hunt, IT Pro Evangelist for Microsoft. Best way to follow me is hit my blog, which is www.bobhunt.net, or you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Bob HMS. And Jose, I'll let you share out your blog and Twitter handle.
Sure. So at Twitter, I am at Jose Barreto, my first and last name. And the blog is at smb3.info. And I just put a blog out with a summary of the report and a link to it. And we typically have lots of links about SMB3 and related items over there. And I wanted to remind folks that this report is a little longer. It covers other topics as well. It's definitely worth the read. Beyond what we commented here, there's a lot of detail in the report itself. So it's definitely worth downloading and maybe even printing and spending some time with it and analyzing all the little details. There's a lot of info there.
Agreed. No, it's a really good one. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for attending today's episode of TechNet Radio, and we'll see you again next time.